Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. Well, hello, friends. It's Tony Collier, and I'm so excited to be a guest host on the Happy Hour podcast. I just want to prep everybody for this conversation, okay? First of all, I want to say that for about 15 minutes there before we even got on to the conversation, we were trying to get connected, okay? Typically, when these type of like mechanical issues that have no explanation happens, it's because on the other side of that adversity is going to be a real good conversation. And so I hope you got your big girl and boy pants on today, because I believe that this is going to be a great conversation, not only because there were technical difficulties, but because I get to talk to my good friend and advisor and big brother and all things healing and grief and all the things that I have been walking through. Dr. Kurt Thompson is in the building. How are you doing today, Kurt? That's what you usually ask me, but I'm in charge now. Yeah, I have the mic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I'm doing better now that I'm talking to you. How's that? Is that better?
That's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
Yeah.
I feel great about my life. Now, I feel great about my life today, Kurt. But as you know, over the last 6 months, I have not felt so great about my life. For those of you that don't know me, I get to do some really fun stuff from speaking to podcasting and writing books and such. But over the last 6 months, I've gone through a really public divorce and full of betrayal and lies and all the things. And I remember I got to the point where I knew that I had to leave because our marriage just, it wasn't God honoring anymore. And thankfully, over the past 3 years, I've been walking with some of, in my opinion, the most mature, beautiful, holy people that I have ever walked with. And that's our confessional community, including Kurt. And I feel like the work that we have done over these past 3 years have prepared me for grief, for the real grief of having to choose to leave a marriage that's no longer God honoring. And that's what we're going to talk about in this episode, is grief. And I think grief has gotten a bad rap. And I think that one of the strongest things we can do on this side of heaven is to get a little bit more comfortable with grief. And so we're going to talk about that. And it's going to be raw and it's going to be honest. And on my podcast, I have this saying, go deep or go home. And so buckle up, Buttercup, because go deep or go home. Welcome to the Happy Hour as we talk about grief on the Happy Hour.
Right on.
So I'm excited. With an incredible counselor. There's a reason why we chose Kurt and these other people to have this conversation, because I don't just think we need to have an inspirational conversation. I think we need to have a clinical conversation, a spiritual conversation, one that we can actually like grip our hands to. And so let's just dive right in, grief. Let's just dive right in, Kurt. Can you just explain what grief is? I feel like it's like your grandmama died and that's what we thought grief was. But I feel like it's a bit more complex than that. Can you talk about it for us?
Well, I think, in some respects, grief is a word that's a placeholder for anything that we experience as human beings that's that is painful, in which we have some kind of rupture that is not repaired. So,
that's good.
Like you can have, this grief ranges from, you know, we lost or we ruined our favorite blouse, which we might say, well, is that really grief? Well,
I did. Just this morning, right here.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it can range from that to, my dog was hit by a car, to I've lost my child to cancer, to our marriage, to this, a range of these things. And what I tell folks is, in some respects, it's kind of like primary colors. You can have the color red as a primary color, but there is a range at which with which red appears. And you've got bright pink and you have crimson. And in some respects, the very same neurological and the very same affective or emotional state that emerges when your favorite football team loses a game is in play. As what happens when your good friend betrays you. The question is the intensity, the depth, the severity, and the degree to which there's any sense in which these ruptures are repaired. And most of our, most of the grief that we carry with us, we do so because we've been experiencing it for many of us. We experience it in all kinds of small ways as kids and then teenagers. And so much of it has just been experiences that no one has ever repaired. Our parents haven't repaired things. Our friends haven't repaired things. Our spouses, marriages, bosses, employees, churches, like we don't repair things. And so we're left, you know, to acknowledge that Jesus was in Isaiah. He was a man of sorrow. He was a man of grief. He knew grief. He knows that grief is what emerges in Genesis chapter 3. There's a grief that happens.
Yeah.
And we are left to try to figure out, what do we do about this?
Okay, but here's what makes me kind of mad though, Kurt. I don't like the idea of having to grieve something and it only getting better when there's repair. Because what if the person never returns to repair? I mean, there's obvious situation, which is, you know, death. But then what if they never return to repair? Am I just going to be grieving forever for the rest of my life?
Well, I think
this relationship, this job, this thing.
Yeah, I think it is in some respects not unlike when we talk about the notion of suffering. I mean, like, we're talking about different words that are getting at the same thing. This notion is that to be human is to grieve. It's not a question of like, am I going to grieve? Like, you're going to grieve. The question is, am I going to grieve? Am I going to do the work of grief, or is grief going to work on me and I'm not going to be a cooperative participant? And I think that what when we come to terms with the fact that grief is what it means to be human, we recognize that there are plenty of people who are going to mistreat us, who never come back to repair this. And if we are left with our grief by ourselves, a significant part of what makes grief grief is that we contain our hurt and our sadness and our anger and our shame and our fear and all the things that this word grief represents. We are with it by ourselves. And this is why the work that you all have done in the confessional community is so crucially important, because it gives you the opportunity to do the work of grief. In a space in which the offending party in so many of your stories, like, they're not coming to make amends. They're not coming to do penance. In fact, they may continue to do the very opposite. They may continue to make you feel like you're the bad guy for whatever this, you know, whatever this rupture is, which is why then we need to have a critical mass of community in our lives who are helping us do the work of healing in our grief, even when we're not really getting the repair of the rupture in the first place.
Okay, I love this. I use this quote all the time, Kurt. Like, this is the thing that I reference you with. I tell people all the time, I'm like, well, Dr. Kurt Thompson believes that it's not necessarily the pain and the abuse and the betrayal and the depression and the anxiety that takes you out. It's doing it all alone that will.
Right.
And I think you're right. And I think I just got my own realization that in this last season for me, it wasn't that on September 19th, I got a call that changed my life forever. Like, it was the moment that I got that call and got off of it and realized that my marriage was no longer God-honoring. And two doors down, my good friend Jamie and Jessica and Lisa Whittle were down the hallway and came for me in there. Because I just don't even think I would have been able to peel myself out of that hotel room had they not been quite literally down the hallway. And I think they were down the hallway, not out of coincidence, but because Jesus knew that I would have been crushed And I would not have been able to get out of that hotel room and get on a plane and get back to my baby so that I could face the reality that I was just told that I've been lied to for the past 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, this is no small part of why the story of the Bible of Father, Son, and Spirit, this Trinitarian community, is such a big deal.
Yeah.
That that God himself models for us what it means for us to not be alone in our grief.
Yeah. See, that's what, okay, I want to dive into that because I do think, I don't know, like Jesus is like the OG griever, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I do not think we've talked about that in the church, which really makes me mad because we think that Jesus is so separate from our grief. But what do you think Jesus says about grief, Kurt? And how does he model that?
Well, I don't know how much he says, but I think when we read the texts, we see how he grieves. We see that he grieves. We see that he weeps over Jerusalem. We know that he weeps over the death of Lazarus and all that that implies. Yep. We know that he weeps, yells, screams, whatever, in Gethsemane. We see him taking seriously his own state of affairs, that there is a rupture that's happening. He's got people that are leaving him, right? The ruptures have been happening from the beginning. I mean, right, you're born into a world in which Herod now starts to kill babies on your account. Like the ruptures have been taking place from the time like you even get into the world. And his awareness of his very presence being responsible for pulling the curtain back on everybody else's grief that they can't tolerate, which is why they're going to kill him. And to know that he allows himself to step into the middle of that, recognizing that he's not going to do that by himself. He's not going to do that by himself. Yeah. Again, which is why I would say too, in my own life, like I've got, these three guys that I meet with every Tuesday morning and a half for 25 years. And, without these guys, I'm a dead man. There's just no question about it. Yeah. I don't survive.
Yeah. You know, in this last season, I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back, a little toot toot, because I have really allowed myself to grieve. But it was a Monday and I was supposed to go to my lawyer's office to sign our divorce papers. So this final paperwork, I really, really thought, I'm not kidding you. I thought I was like, I'm going to have a party. Like I am free. I no longer have to be lied to and betrayed. Like this is going to be my day of redemption. I walk into that office. I walk out 30 minutes later and I have to call a friend because I'm so crushed and I'm weeping and I'm so mad, Kurt, that I feel that way. I'm so mad. It has already cost me so much. And for the first time, I think in this journey, I really ran from grief. I couldn't help it. I was crying. It was what it was. But I don't even think the tears were me grieving. I think that they were just leaking out of me because they had to force their way out in that day.
Okay. Wait.
Oh, tell me. So, are you about to counsel me? I'm ready.
So I'm curious. Say more. But when you say I don't think the tears were me grieving. Say more about what you mean by that.
Well, I felt bad because I felt like I'd been doing such a good job at saying it's a grief day. Like I'm going to cry today, and I was so welcoming of my tears and my pain. And then on this particular day, I had this expectation that I was going to be joyful and happy, and I would feel a sense of relief. And it was the worst day. And so I feel like
I'm not in trouble.
Okay.
Who told you that that would be a joy day?
That makes me cry. I don't know. I think it was me. I think I longed for it to be a joy day.
Sure. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And I think that who is like the little girl in me,
Yeah.
That's like, well, I've already been through so much pain and grief. Like, surely this is the day.
Right.
Yeah.
We tell people that our tears are our soul running for daylight. And and as long as we have tears that are mixed with sadness and rage and hurt and bewilderment and confusion, not the tears of joy, not the tears of lighthearted vulnerability, but as long as we have those tears, then we have grief.
Wow.
And we remind people that we don't have a particular statute of limitations on grief. It's not like, oh, you should you'll be done with this in 17 days. Mm. It doesn't work like that. And the thing is, that's important for us to recognize. It's easy for us, I'm still sad, and then that makes me mad that I'm still sad, because and then I'm embarrassed that I'm angry that I'm sad and all the things. And again, what I think is important is for us to recognize that as long as we have any of this, the temptation will be for me to feel like I'm supposed to somehow figure this out by myself. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to, well, whatever my tears bring, I'm supposed to be the one who narrates the story and makes sense of what I'm sensing. Yeah. It's only when we have others who are with us who can continually validate and keep shame out of the room when it wants to entangle itself in these emotional processes that we are actually then able to move through those processes without worrying about where we are in the process. I mean, there's so many applications that we have for Jesus' words when he says, look, unless you change and become like little kids, heaven's not going to work for you. And one of the ways that that happens is that when children are upset, like if they're in a home where they are securely attached, they're not calculating in their mind, how much time do I have to cry? I gotta keep track of that.
Oh, that's good.
I guess I'm coming up on my 2 minutes. I'm gonna have to wrap up these tears, right? No. They.
Yeah, my son doesn't have that at all. He likes to cry. I feel like that sucker's like, you ready for some screams? I'm about to kick it up a notch. Okay.
Well, and so part of what we do as parents is that we are with our children, and we shepherd that process of grief in such a way that they learn that their tears are received. Right. We can be hospitable. Mm-hmm. So that they can learn that they can be hospitable to their own tears. And they also learn over time how to regulate that. They fall down, they scrape their knee, it hurts really bad. They start to cry, the parent comes to them. And over the course of the next few minutes, the parent's connection with the child, the parent starting to address the scraped knee, it all starts to move toward that child's tears stopping, not just because we're fixing the wound, but because the child senses the parent's presence. And this then trains them to learn, well, this is what co-regulation of my distress means. And I also learned that when I am overwhelmed, that the most important thing for me to be doing to regulate my overwhelm is not what do I think that I'm supposed to do, it's who am I supposed to call.
Oh, that's good.
So those three women down the hall on the 19th of September.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, it's not that they come and give you information. They come and give you their presence.
Ugh. Y'all, I feel like, listen, this is the episode right here where some people are about to be set free. Let me just say that. And I feel like anyone that's listening or watching right now, like, you need to go ahead and send this to everybody that you know, because I just strongly feel, again, like, I really feel it now in this season over the last 6 months, like, we have to get good at grieving. I do not know where I would be today after all that has happened to me if I did not learn how to grieve well. And really what that means is to grieve with others. And it's been so healing. Okay, let's talk about the flip side. Let's get dark here for a second. Running from grief. This is the thing I hear all the time. Oh my goodness. I don't want to feel pain. I don't want to do it. I don't want to talk about it. I'm fine. I'm so sick of that I'm fine generation. It's like, I'm okay. I'm fine. What do we risk running from grief?
Well, I think there are two things.
How bad can it get?
I think there are two things. Number one, grief is like, not unlike if you sprain your ankle, you have the inflammatory response, and we don't like it. I don't like the inflammatory response for my ankle, but it is my body's normal natural response that initiates the healing process for the sprained ankle. In the same way, grief is not unlike this. It's an emotional inflammatory response that is necessary and is predictable, and it is normal for us. Wow. And we are people of grief. We are not just like, well, maybe I will be and maybe I won't be. The question is not, are you going to grieve? The question is, could you give me a list of your griefs, please? I'd like to see them.
Yeah.
And to the degree that we're not paying attention to it, whatever those griefs are, and everybody who's listening has them, what I'm really doing is I'm actively having to burn energy neurobiologically to keep those griefs out of my conscious awareness. And that is energy that at some point, you know, I can do this for a certain period of time, kind of like I can ignore my sprained ankle for a little while. And then at some point, my body's going to say, no, I'm not doing that. And that's when you find yourself having a panic attack, or you find yourself gradually not sleeping as well, or you're becoming, or you're drinking too much, or we're doing all the things that we're doing to continue to keep my grief under wraps. And so
to numb the energy of the grief.
Exactly.
To numb the energy of the grief.
Because I have the sense that I can't tolerate it. And here's the news, Tony. I, by myself, cannot tolerate it.
Can't.
We help me tolerate it. This is, and this is the good news. We help me learn to tolerate this. But here's the here's where evil is really sneaky. Yes, when we bury our grief, eventually we're going to pay for it with symptoms. This is why I like I'm never going to be out of a job. Lord. Okay? Ooh. But the way evil is really sneaky is this. It's evil's intention is not just to have us feeling bad. What evil really can't tolerate is what happens when, in the process of moving through that grief, of addressing the grief, I then release and make available that energy that I was using to bury my grief. That energy is now available for me to create risks, to take risks, to create beauty and goodness in the world that has been for me before the foundation of the world. God has prepared for me, but I'm not doing that work you know, with others. I'm not taking those kind of vulnerable steps of becoming outposts of Eden in the world because all that energy is being shifted to burying all my grief. Evil knows that in the day that we grieve properly in the context of a vulnerable community, it is even in more trouble, not just because I feel better, but because now I am released to do the creative, vulnerable work of being in the world in the way that evil can't stop. And that's what evil's really afraid of.
I love this conversation so much right now. And I think it's because of this last piece. It's evil wins when we don't grieve well. And
that's well said.
There's so much beauty left in us. There's so much beauty left in us after pain and abandonment and betrayal and all of these things. And for many of us, we have been crushed by grief because we've allowed evil to win. By not grieving well. And I don't want that in my life. And I don't want that in my friends' lives. And I don't want that in our listeners' lives. Like, I want us to be able to still create beauty after really hard things. Like, that's my, like, my mantra. That's the still coloring. That's the broken crayon still color. And we want the beauty without grieving.
Right.
But I don't think we can get to it without it.
I love, my, you know, my friend Mako Fujimura, Japanese-American painter, who does this work called Nyonga, and it is this pulverized, you know, rock that's pulverized to the consistency of talc, and then it's mixed in a very, very thin glue that becomes the paint. And as he likes to talk about, that the more finely pulverized the minerals are, the more refraction one has on the painting, the more accessibly the light is able to create more brilliance on the canvas as the light hits the canvas and then reflects back through the refraction. And it's a beautiful testimony and an example of how this whole notion, when Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, yes, you're the light of the world. Mm. I love this idea, like an unbroken beacon that, you know, there's no heartache, there's no grief. But the whole notion of light, you know, coming through me as a pulverized refraction mineral is like, it's not hard. It's hard for me to imagine this until, like, I continue to come back to what you all in the confessional community are doing.
Yeah.
And how the work that you do together bears witness to the world about what beauty looks like, not in the presence of perfection, but because of the very grief that you're bringing to the table.
Mm. I can't do this no more. I'm going to cry again. I think I just deeply desire for people to get this right, because there is so much beauty left in us. I can't get over that line. I just can't get over the line that the enemy is coming for our beauty. And it's quite, what we're talking about here is so opposite than what the world is presenting. Like, it's so opposite. It's like, be happy, be strong, keep going. Like, don't let it take you out. Whatever. Forget that man. He was boo-boo de fool. Like, don't even. But what we're saying here is, no, don't forget. Don't forget the pain. Don't forget what you've gone through. Actually, leave it on you. Share some with some people and watch yourself stand back up again because you did it. And that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, last thing. I know we got some practical patties on the happy hour. I know we do too, because I have seen this audience and they like to work, okay? They're like, what do I need to do? How do I need to do this? What do I need to do? For someone that is listening and watching right now, Kurt, maybe it's old grief. Maybe it's like, well, this happened to me a whole long time ago and I should be over it by now and it's fine, I've moved on. Can we talk to that person who doesn't want to go back into the grief and encourage them to go back, and why?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I would say is it's important that if in our audience, I would want you to hear us saying that we're encouraging you to go into your grief with someone else. We're not saying just go hole up by yourself. We're saying
that's good.
The first thing that before we do any exercises, the first thing is I would want to say, think of one person that you can trust. That you can trust good. Enough. You might have, well, I can't trust people. One person that you can trust enough. And then once you have them, once they agreed, like, I'm going to hear this from you, you can, I would love for you to think, like, however old you are, I'd like for you to make a list of two things from this year that have given you grief. Two things from 5 years ago that gave you grief.
Wow.
Two things from a decade ago that gave you grief. And something and however far back we're going, something within the first decade and something within the second decade of your life that gave you grief.
I'm writing this down.
And then I want to invite you to consider, think like, which of these stories do I want to tell this person?
Wow.
You can tell one, you can tell them all, but I just want to just imagine, pick. And when you think about telling them, and you're like, no, I don't want to tell them that story from when I was 17. What I would love for you to consider then is like, tell the story, talk about talking about your grief, meaning you don't have to tell the story. I want instead to tell the story of what you think would happen if you did tell the story. Because I can tell you that is part of the grief that you're holding. Part of the grief that you hold is not just what happened to you. Part of the grief that we hold is the story that we then tell about what would happen to us if we told someone about this grief. I mean, children, again, back to Jesus, children don't wonder. They just come tell you things unless they've learned that it's not.
They do.
Unless it,
all they business.
Unless they've learned that it's not safe to do that. But unless we've trained them that we are not to be trusted, they just tell you things. Yeah. But our traumas get us to places where we don't trust ourselves to be okay in telling someone something. And that then becomes just another layer of this grief. And so some of the work that we're doing is, okay, you don't have to tell me the story. Tell me what you're afraid I'm going to do if you did tell me the story.
Wow.
Give it to me in like yards. Give it to me in concrete terms. Not like, oh, you're not going to like me. Like, how would you know? What am I going to say? What am I going to sound like? What am I going to, am I going to just stop texting you? Am I just going to ghost? What am I actually going to do in my behavior? Because what we find is that the very act of beginning to talk about what we're afraid will happen when we begin to talk about a grief is actually the beginning of doing the work on the grief.
Yeah. Well, folks, okay, first of all, I just want everyone to know that I wrote these notes down because I'm about to do this activity my own self, okay? So I hope that you are taking notes. We'll put all, this is going to be like our new grief activity. I think we're going to pop this in the show notes, Kurt. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Okay, can I say one more thing? Can I say one more thing?
What are you even talking about?
I'm trying to honor you. Wait. So here's the thing.
Here's the thing. Help us.
The goal is not eventually to somehow think that, okay, the goal is not to list all of my griefs because somehow I believe that if I were to list all my griefs, then I could work through all my griefs, I could check all the boxes, and then I'm going to reach a benchmark where I will no longer grieve. No.
Okay, yes.
No.
That's me.
That is not what we're up to. What we're up to is that we are learning to become comfortable with the reality that we are people of grief, and I'm going to become increasingly comfortable and confident in naming my grief as it emerges, because it's going to emerge until I'm dead. Because evil is not about to go quietly into the night. It is going to continue to come back around and remind us of old things. Even though we think we've healed from that, something's going to happen 5 years from now. You thought you'd work things out with your parents or with your ex or with your this or with your that, and you really worked it out, and then something's going to happen, and all this memory is going to flood back into you, and you're going to be like, where is my healing? Well, I thought I was healed. I thought this was done. Like, imagine Lazarus. Like, if you really want to be Lazarus, he comes out from the grave. He's like, crap, I'm going to have to do this again. At some point, I'm going to get sick again and do this.
Yeah.
And so it's really important for us to recognize that what God is doing, he's not just trying to get us to work through our grief. He's trying to turn us into people who are unafraid of it. That's what he's trying to do.
Kurt, that is the first time I've heard that. That's really good for my soul. You are just brilliant, Kurt.
Now we're in water that's way over our head.
Now you get to get weird. but that is, I keep thinking about the souls that are listening to this episode. I keep thinking about you, the people of grief, and I think about my daughter. And I think for the first time in my life, I'm like, I hope my children can become good people of grief. Because that's real good news.
That's right.
Woo!
Yeah.
All right, y'all. We're going to go home. But I really do hope and pray that someone listening today is forever changed because of this conversation. That some things have been unlocked and we've maybe given you some freedom to become a person of grief. That's what I hope. So Thanks for listening today to the happy hour. Guest host Tony Collier, going deep. People are like, okay, was coming here for inspiration. I left with the snot. All right. And thank you, Kurt, for being here.
Tony, a pleasure. Very much. Always.
Bye, guys.
The Happy Hour is produced and hosted by myself, Jamie Ivey, with assistance from Nikki Ogden and Ashley Caldwell. And the show is edited by Jason Talley.